Chapter 16. Psyche Nguyen. Magnus had told him of them, but he had spoken of solid flesh and blood things, products of Prospero's bizarre warp-drenched history. They had been a blight on the otherwise benign world, consuming the minds of mortals. The Thousand Suns had hunted them, driving them into the wilds and far from their glittering spires. Now, like everything else, they had been reduced to ghosts, remnants of the living horrors they had been. Only, unlike all the other destroyed fauna, they had retained some vestige of their old wills. Their grotesque, insectoid bodies still hovered, their sickeningly enlarged cranium still pulsed with the ravenous energies of the immaterium. Their mandibles clacked, just as they always had, their huge wings still blurred, their twitching stings still arced under their bulging abdomen sacs. Only now they were translucent and shimmering, just psychic echoes of once vital neuropredators. They emerged from all over the square, slipping eerily from the stone and sweeping compound eye bundles around them. The Keshig opened fire with their combi bolters, sending rounds punching straight through them. That seemed to do nothing but attract them, and they began to home in on the source of the noise. The Khan charged at the nearest of them, leaping and twisting in the air to plunge his dao through the creature's head, aiming to slice it clean from the thorax. It connected with nothing. His momentum carried him bodily into the Psyche Nguyen's ghostly body, and a sensation of utter frigidity shuddered through him. His heart burst into overdrive. He felt a sucking at his chest and a rushing boom in his ears. He stumbled through on the far side of it, falling to one knee, panting heavily. Spots swam before his eyes. The Khan twisted around, just managing to hold his blade in guard. The thing came at him again, still swaying erratically. It lurched at him, misjudging the direction, and ploughing frictionlessly into the ground to his left.
It cannot see.
The Khan withdrew, panting, still feeling the horrific drag on his soul.
Do not let them touch you, he voxed. They are blind. Remain at distance.
More Psyche Nguyen were rising by then, floating over the ash and ruins. One of them seemed to sense the presence of a Terminator close by and swooped straight at him. The warrior, named Margie, a veteran who had carved a bloody trail across 100 worlds, loosed a perfectly targeted volley from his combi bolter. The shells did nothing but shred the ruins beyond. The Psyche Nguyen struck, clutching on to Margie with its trailing limbs and angling its swollen abdomen for a sting. Margie lashed out, plunging his blade deep into the creature's body, but nothing connected. The Psyche Nguyen latched a long proboscis onto his helm, and its glowing tip sunk beneath the ceramite. Margie screamed. In a century of warfare, Margie had never screamed. The noise was appalling. A howl of pure agony wrenched from his helm's augmenters and dragged into the night. Lumpy matter sucked up the translucent proboscis, which bulged and flexed obscenely. Maggi went rigid, embraced by the Psyche Nguyen's spectral limbs, dropping his blade and twitching violently. Blood spurted fitfully from his gorged seal as he was lifted off the ground. By then another of the Keshig had raced to his side, thudding into him and hauling him back. Three more took on the creature itself, pumping bolt rounds into its incorporeal outline with no visible effect. The Khan, dao in hand, was almost there himself when he heard fresh buzzing diving low over his head. He skidded to a halt to stare up at the huge outline of a Psyche Nguyen dropping down upon him. He felt the same chill as before, like an icy fist closing over his lungs. He thrust upwards instinctively, punching his blade into the brain-swollen head of the monster. For a terrible moment it felt as if his flesh were being ripped from the bone, flensed out of the armour and dispersed into nothing. Then the metal connected with something spongy, piercing it. The Psyche Nuin recoiled, snapping its mandibles in pain but making no sound. It jolted, flickering in and out of focus. Seeing it could be hurt, the Khan pressed the attack, ripping his blade clear and swiping back at the creature's thorax. This time the sword edge struck home. The wounded Psyche Nuin exploded, dissolving into a cloud of lurid brilliance. Shreds of blazing matter radiated out, shrieking through the night in a whirlwind of released energy. The dust howled around him, stirred by the shockwave. A sound like shattering glass rang out across the courtyard, ripping the flagstones apart for meters in every direction. Damaged by the detonation, the ground gave way further under the Khan's feet, undulating like water before splintering into fragments. With a run of hard, sharp cracks, a fresh fissure yawned wide beneath him, dragging him down amidst an avalanche of tumbling stone and sliding scree. He tried to grab hold of something, to seize the edge of the hole that was forming and pull himself out. He almost made it. His fingers caught onto a narrow ledge of stone, and for a second he thought that it might hold. Then the flag cracked and he fell. A shower of rubble sheared across his helm lenses. Over the thunder of collapsing masonry, he heard the shouts of his warriors and the maddening buzz of more Psyche Nuin. Then it was all gone, lost in the roar of breaking stone. He fell fast, hurtling through a blurred underworld of collapsing earth. For a terrible moment, he thought it might never stop, that some portal into the warp had been opened up under Prospero's burned surface, and that he had been sucked into its maw. But then he hit something solid. More debris crashed and thudded, burying him even as he slid down further, scrabbling against the slope of whatever he had landed on. In the pitch darkness, his helm struggled to compensate, giving him only blurred and swiveling impressions of where he was. Slowly, grindingly, he came to a halt. The rockfall continued for a few moments before that too gave out. He was buried up to his chest. The rock wall at his back felt solid, but everything else remained fragile. He braced himself as best he could. He had fallen a long way. His helm display ran with static and gave him no figures, but the crevasse mouth was not visible above him. He felt wedged between shoulders of solidity.
Quinja, he voxed.
Nothing. Gingerly he moved his arm. Somehow he had managed to keep hold of his blade on the way down, and the Tao emerged from a cascade of loose scree. His helm lenses stabilized. His surroundings were revealed in a series of blurry grey outlines, and he turned his head carefully, scoping. Tunnels ran away from him, twisting organically in the gloom. Some were choked with rubble, others half clear. He saw faint shafts of light up ahead, no doubt from where other crevasses led back up to the surface. The earth around him was honeycombed into chambers and arteries. A void ran away to his right, just over head height but narrow. He could hear more stone falls in the distance, echoing through the underworld.
Ja!
He voxed again, carefully pulling himself clear of the debris. The rubble shifted heavily, lodging into the cracks around him, and he sloughed it off. Again, nothing. The vox signal hissed with interference. The space around him was hot and claustrophobic. He could barely move his arms without scraping them, and he had to stoop to move. He looked up. The path of his descent disappeared after a few meters, lost in the twists and turns of the subterranean warren. He judged how possible it would be to claw his way back up and reached for a handhold. The rock crumbled under his touch. More debris tumbled down from the gap, skittering from his armor. Not possible. He checked the vox again. No signal. He checked for proximity markers, targets, threat indicators, and found nothing. The Khan kicked the last of the rubble from his boots. He could follow the fissure to his right for a while. It was a lead, at least. In this strange underground world of sinkholes and chasms, it might open up into something bigger. He had come looking for caves. He had found them. Quinjar tried to run, but the ripple wave of breaking rockcrete nearly upended him.
The Khorgon!
He roared over the squad vox, bracing himself against the buck and snap of the earth beneath his feet. Rifts were opening across the whole expanse of the square. A jetting geyser of methane stabbed up a few metres away, ignited into blue-tinged flame as it thundered. The pillar's plinth fractured. The warriors of the Keshig all moved at the same time, scrambling towards the chasm even as the stone around them buckled. The Saiknuin kept up the attack throughout. They seemed to have been maddened by the explosion that had annihilated one of their number. Maji was dead. He had no visible wounds, but the Saiknuin kept at him, mobbing his body and extending their proboscis into his prone body. The two warriors who had come to his aid were forced to withdraw, no longer wasting shells on creatures that could not be hit. Just as Quinjar neared the chasm that had swallowed the Khan, more Saiknuin hove into range, swaying towards him with strangely unerring intent. Quinjar leapt up at the nearest, powered by his armor's servos. Following the Khan's example, he sliced it at the junction between wing bulge and thorax. His blade, perfectly aimed, passed straight through, just as before, freezing him as his arm was absorbed by the ghostly flesh. The Saiknuin locked onto him, sinking tendrils into his still-moving body. Quinjar dropped away, stricken with preternatural chill, and feeling his heart race out of control. His mind seemed to slacken, as if his very being were being leached from its frame. The Saiknuin dipped in closer, slavering and chittering. Quinjar scrambled away, slashing his blades ineffectively. Somehow the Khan had managed to hurt them, but whatever he had done was not easily replicated. The ground bucked again, and a spear of lightning whipped against the broken pillar. A massive rumble ran up from the ground, breaking open more fissures. Another of the Keshig screamed as he was caught, just as Maji had.
Oh, I cannot fight this. Fall back!
Quinjar roared, staggering away from the creature in front of him. It came after him, just as erratically as before, guided by some imperfect psychic sense. The other warriors did not respond to the order immediately. Despite their fearsome levels of discipline, leaving the site of the Khorgon's fall was anathema. They surged back across the heaving terrain, lumbering away from the Saiknuin attacks as best they could, trying to reach the crumbling maw of the fissure that had swallowed their Primarch. It was a doomed attempt. Another of the creatures struck, clamping on to the foremost warrior and eliciting the now familiar scream of mental agony. Other Saiknuin latched on to the victim's paralyzed body, threading their phantasm tentacles through the heavy battle plate like fingers through water.
Fall back!
Ordered Quinjar for a second time, retreating steadily across the square. This time the surviving members of the Keshig came with him, crunching across the debris, harassed and pursued by swarms of shimmering predators. They pulled together. Faces turned to the oncoming ghosts and retreated towards the gaping jaws of a bombed-out terrace on the near edge of the square. The Saiknuin came after them, still making no sound beyond the endless buzzing and still swaying blindly. Quinjar swept his gaze around the terrain. There was plenty of cover, but that would do little good if the creatures were not hampered by it. Their vision was obviously defective or absent. If they could somehow shake them off, it might be possible to outflank them and get back to the ravine edge. Quinjar's proximity sensor had lost the Khan's signal, and the vox channel was silent. The 9 surviving Terminators cleared the perimeter of the ruins. Another warrior, Juma, by the kill markers on his pauldron, was caught just before crossing the boundary. His battle brothers immediately made to support him.
No!
Shouted Quinjar, though it wrenched at him to give the order.
Stay together! Keep moving!
They obeyed, and pulled back further into the shadow of windowless walls. Behind them, Juma's agony echoed from the stone. They pushed deeper inside, shouldering aside the broken outline of old door frames and kicking through tottering wall sections. Quinjar's mind raced as he went. Nothing hurt them. Nothing deterred them. For a terrible moment he began to wonder if the stories of space wolves had been mistaken. Perhaps these things were what had devastated the planet, sweeping aside whatever defenders stood up to them. They broke into what had once been a huge domed chamber. Spars from the roof still extended upwards, broken halfway like snapped bones. A huge banner, tattered and stiff with ash, hung from a listing flagpole, sporting the eye motif of Magnus. On the far side stood a largely intact wall, still bearing a marble facade in places. Huge chunks of masonry and steel littered the floor, forming natural barricades. Dust-encased bodies slumped everywhere, mortal and space marine alike. Quinjar stopped retreating. The remaining Keshig fell in beside him, forming up a broken line among the barricades. He heard the clink and shunt of combi bolters being reloaded. The Psychnuin followed them in. They surged straight through walls and pillars, glistening like warp trails. Their unholy light fell across the shadowy wreckage. Quinjar kept his blades raised. For some reason it seemed more likely that a sword would hurt them than a ranged weapon. The Kargan had managed it. Perhaps it was a matter of technique. The Psychnuin glided closer, dozens of them now, each as insubstantial as jellyfish.
"For the Kargan,"
murmured Quinjar, preparing his soul for the trial. Then suddenly he felt the build-up of enormous power. A second later, the entire chamber filled with light. Flames leapt up from underneath the Psychnuin, seemingly bursting from the ground itself. The creatures wailed and thrashed, caught up in a maelstrom of blazing purple-tinged fire. One by one they burst apart, exploding with sharp bangs that cracked the earth beneath them. More flames rushed down the line, rearing up and licking along the shafts of the pillars. The heat was incredible. The sound of it deafening, though the barrage only lasted for a few seconds. The last of the Psychnuin vanished, leaving behind only echoing wails and flickers of ghostly after-images. The chamber shell fell silent again. Quinjar scanned around and above, searching for the source. Just as he did so, he felt a fresh surge of power just behind him. He turned, but too late. His arms went rigid, locked by spidery lines of energy that ran from the gauntlets to the shoulder joint. He felt a huge weight pressing against his heart, slowing him down and deadening his movements. A bolter was pressed against his chest, angled up from a figure before him in crimson armour. His faceplate was gold-crested Mark III, archaic and festooned with Thousand Suns iconography.
"Move, and I kill him,"
said the legionary, speaking out loud to the entire Keshig. The muzzles of half a dozen combi-bolters swiveled in his direction. Quinjar Blink transmitted a desist order to his brothers.
"And you are?"
he asked.
"Revuel Arvida, last of my kind. You, Quinjar? Master of the Keshig, 5th Legion."
He looked down at the bolter. Even at point-blank range, it probably wouldn't penetrate his Terminator plate. His would-be killer was taking a fearsome risk.
"What happened here?"
The legionary didn't answer for a moment. He stared up at the ivory giants that surrounded him, as though weighing up his options.
"You really don't know?"
Quinjar felt the grip on his arm slacken.
"My Primarch is down there. You can't go back. How do we get to him?" "You can't. They infest that place."
Quinjar felt his heart sink. There had to be a way.
"But you can hurt them."
Arvida shook his head.
"Not for long. They used to die. Now they just come back. Why are you even here? This world is cracking apart."
The Thousand Suns legionary had an aura about him, like Yasugai did, rippling with pent-up energy. He was damaged, though, Quinjar could hear the strained breathing through his vox grill.
"We came to find the truth," he said.
Arvida laughed then, a sour, grating rattle.
"Ah, the truth."
As he spoke, the sound of more Psychnuin gathering echoed from back the way they had come. Arvida lowered his bolter and holstered it.
"They'll be back soon, and I won't be able to stop them again."
"I will not leave him."
"You can't do any good. Not right now. Trust me, this is, or was, my world."
The buzzing drew nearer.
"I can sense him. He's alive. All you'll do if you stay here is have your mind consumed, which will not help anyone."
Quinjar glanced over his shoulder. Through the empty frames of old windows, he could see the glow of more swarms. It would not be long before they came again, seeking out souls.
"Lead them,"
he growled, feeling the burn of failure.
"Get us out of here."
Yasugai headed back to Ledak's holding cell, his mood dark. Henrikos's extraction of Zaven's gene seed had been a messy business. He was no apothecary. It had felt like a further insult to the salamander's memory. The death had been unnecessary. It had been reckless, driven by pride and desire for knowledge, all the things he had warned Ahriman against. Mortals scurried out of his path as he strode along. The ship was being emptied. A few cogitators had been taken over to the Hesiod, but almost everything else, including the word-bearer's mortal crew, was staying. The longer Yasugai stayed aboard, the more the place made his flesh crawl. Demon. That was the word, the old Gothic title he had not been able to drag to mind until afterwards. Yeomo or Yaksha were the Korchin equivalents, fragments of old stories that had somehow survived the coming of Unity and the banishment of the old fears. They had never gone away, not really, just been hidden under a veneer of technological hyperpower. Zaven had deserved better. Yasugai would have liked to have stood beside him when he found Vulcan and had his faith rewarded. He knew how it would have gone. A stoical bow, a brief word of recognition, then back to the task, shoulder to the wheel. If the entire Imperium had been Promethean, corruption would never have gained so much as a foothold. He reached the cell doors and the guards looked at him warily.
"I'll go now," he told them.
They stared at one another, then up at him again.
"Lord, I..."
one began.
"Go now."
Yasugai waited until they were gone before opening the doors again. The lumen flickered on as he entered, casting its bleak, antiseptic light over the hanging prisoner. Ledak opened his eyes and smiled again.
"Back for more, witch?" he asked. "Where's the other one?"
"Will not be joining us,"
said Yasugai, sealing the doors behind him. The word-bearer's legionary looked at him steadily.
"So, what do you want to know?"
he asked.
"Nothing."
Yasugai placed his hands together, feeling the first pricks of etheric power against the inside of his gauntlets. Ledak nodded resignedly.
"Wondered how long it would take."
Yasugai looked at him contemptuously.
"Zaven was fine warrior. I liked him. I do not think he understood how things change."
He stood before Ledak and raised his hands.
"Everything changes. This ship will soon be atoms. You too, Ledak."
The word-bearer's legionary stared back at him, eyeball to eyeball, never flinching. His cheek was still only semi-healed, caked with a pus-streaked crust of scabs.
"Really? No questions?" he asked.
Yasugai shook his head.
"Not anymore," he said.
And the chamber filled with fire. The Khan clambered over a waist-high blockage in the tunnel, squeezing through the gap beyond. His armor grazed the rock, dragging dust down with him. He could hear his breathing echo in his helm, heavy and dragging. It was horrifically hot. The walls of the tunnels pressed against him, forcing him to bend double. He had only been able to go down, despite several attempts to find a route back to the surface. The space under the square was bizarre. A honeycomb of capillaries and chambers, all cramped and fissured, all showing signs of recent movement. The ash that coated the surface was down there, too. There was no water, nor any sign of it. Once or twice he had caught glimpses of a sullen red glow creeping out of the mouths of particular chasms, and had skirted wide around them. Always down. Some tunnels sloped gently. Others plunged along steep gradients of broken stone. He had stopped often, listening to the beating of his hearts, trying to detect anything but stillness around him. The Psyche Nguyen had not followed him down, that was something, but the absence of any movement beyond his own was chilling. He dragged himself across the blockage, righting himself on the far side. The air felt a little clearer ahead, and the tunnel roof rose by half a metre. He managed to stand upright and edged forwards. The dark around him was now complete, picked out in false contours by his helm's night vision. The tunnel widened with every pace. The heat increased. The Khan travelled another 50 metres or so before it opened up fully. A jagged jawline of stalagmites framed the final obstacle, and he was through into the chamber beyond. The space was immense. The upper reaches soared away into the darkness, vast and vaulted like some buried cathedral. Gigantic stalactites hung, glossy with the mineral residue of old moisture. Other tunnel entrances opened up along the walls, some high up, others at floor level. The walls curved upward steeply, terraced like an auditorium and striated with bands of metallic ore. If there had been any light, the whole place might have glinted and refracted it like an immense geode. As it was, his auto-senses picked out the same dreary layer of ash carpeting everything. He strode out into the centre of the chamber, his footfalls barely echoed in the dust. Ahead of him, huge shapes emerged in the gloom. It took a while for him to see what they were. A viewing lens lay shattered on the floor, 6 metres in diameter. Brass instruments lay about it, each one smashed or warped. A huge cylinder, the length of a thunderhawk, reared up in the distance, its angled profile disfigured by a long, jagged crack. The Khan stooped. There were bodies buried beneath the ash and metal. Human bodies, mortal in stature. They were naked, or their robes had burned away, leaving nothing but withered flesh and exposed bone. He saw an eyeless, husk-dry face peering up at him from the filth. With a start, he thought that it was moving, but it was nothing but a trick of the dark. Everything, everyone, was dead. Qin Zha had been right. There was nothing left on Prospero. He had been a fool to come, and a greater fool to come down to the surface in person. Perhaps it could have been scanned from orbit if they had worked harder and found some way to do it remotely. He rested his hands upon his knees and gazed about him. It was only then that he felt it. A stirring, a restless, gentle movement in the dust. He leapt to his feet and whirled around. The figure before him glowed emptily, just like the Psyche Nguyen had done. Witchlight flickered around his ghostly outline, burning coldly. He stood a little taller than the Khan, just as he had done in life. His face was the same, though the expression was infinitely weary and a little distracted. His lone eye did not focus. In the past, its focus had been remorseless. The Khan held his ground, speechless, still gripping his blade. He could feel his heart's pumping, his body flooding with combat readiness. None of that was necessary. When the figure spoke, The voice dispelled any trace of doubt.
Jagatai, said Magnus,
his tired voice echoing strangely.
My friend, how good to see you again.